This episode is brought to you by Visit Williamsburg. In Williamsburg, Virginia, there's never too much of a good thing. Whether you're a foodie, a golfer, a history buff, a shopaholic, an outdoor enthusiast, or a thrill seeker, you'll find what you came for here and more. So ask yourself, what is it you want? Discover Williamsburg and plan your trip at visitwilliamsburg.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
This is iFanboy Booksplode, Superman for all seasons. Welcome to another edition of iFanboy Booksplode, Superman for all seasons. My name is Connor Kilpatrick. I'm here with Josh Flanagan.
Hey there.
And for the second Booksplode in a row, we have a special guest with us. This time we've brought back our old co-host, Paul Montgomery.
Hello. I'm in autumn.
Because Paul is a Superman superfan, and we thought, what a perfect guest to have on to talk about Superman for all seasons, the 1998 miniseries from Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale, and Bjarne Hansen. I could not remember what year this came out. I was reading it. I was like, when did this come out? And I thought, it must have been the 2000s. No, nope, it was 98. It was right after Batman The Long Halloween made Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale superstars. And they took their microscope and turned it over to Superman in a four-issue prestige miniseries that encapsulates one season per issue, starting with spring. Spoilers, if you've never read the book, and for some reason listening, have never read the book, let's just get into it. I mean, there's not a lot of history to talk about. It's just, it was a four-issue prestige miniseries from DC Comics in 1998. And I found that, and Paul and I were talking before with the show, waiting for Josh to show up. Everything is horrible right now.
I was like, wait, we were talking about...
This book made me feel better.
Yes.
Made me feel better about everything.
My initial take on the book is this, what I said. You know, in Pulp Fiction, where John Travolta takes a sip of the milkshake and he's like, oh, that's a pretty good milkshake. That's how I was a couple of pages in. And I was annoyed that I had to read some. I'm always annoyed that I have a thing to do. It doesn't matter if it's good or bad.
Oh, yeah.
But I read it really quickly and I was very happy. Like, I was like, I could keep reading this. Because at first I was like, oh, I don't want to read the two stories at the end of my deluxe edition. And I was like, all right, let's just get a little more. We'll finish those. We'll go for it. And I was like, that was it? Because it was a perfect thing of beauty in a way that I haven't read this, I don't think, since originally.
Mm-hmm.
And I really liked it then, but I did not have the appreciation for the medium, nor had I read 24 years worth of substandard comics at that point that I could then go back and go, oh, the Superman thing that everybody can't do is this.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't seem difficult.
Yeah, it feels effortless in a way.
It's a bit of a cheat. It's not an ongoing, you know, serialized story. And you can only tell this kind of story so many times. But you can inject this into the thing. And that is what doesn't happen.
Right.
I don't know. Like, it's special. So
this embraces the timeless quality and the inherent goodness of Superman. It doesn't feel the need to make Superman weak. It doesn't feel the need to make him... He is full of doubt here because he's young. It doesn't feel the need to diminish Superman. It's perfectly happy with the way Superman is. And celebrates that. And the whole thing is about his search for goodness. You know, it starts off the spring story. He's in high school. He's a senior. He's about to graduate. And, you know, he doesn't know what this means to be Superman. And he's sort of gaining his powers through that first story. He's already strong and can fly, but now he's got X-ray vision and he can hear, you know, he's got a super hearing. And then the whole journey sort of takes us through his discovery of himself. Before we really get into the book, I had a thought that, Josh, what you just said sparked it in my brain again. We've been doing a lot of nostalgia acts on this Booksplode show, right? The last couple of years, we've been really sort of diving into stuff from the last 20, 30 years prior, or 10 years prior. And we have often talked on the Pick of the Week show about how the last great golden age of comics was 2000, 2009, that sort of era. And I would even stretch it out, maybe 95 to 2009. I feel like at that point in time, we were having like these kind of game-changing works coming out semi-regularly. It doesn't seem to happen anymore.
I mean, I think that one thing here is that this is a reaction, because it's early enough, this is a reaction to the 90s.
Sure.
Which was dark, grim, gritty, that kind of art. I mean, at this point in comics, having an artist like Tim Sale, if they hadn't had a breakout on The Long Halloween, this book doesn't happen. In fact, I'm surprised that, because people, we've heard from lots of people well into the 2000s, oh, this is too cartoony, you can't do this.
Right.
And, you know, this was so stylistic that it was really unusual. Like, I know we look at it now and we're like, oh, it's just one of these kind of things. But, you know, this is really unusual. This is not standard stuff art-wise.
Well, they did like six of these, the two of them. They did three, like four at Marvel and Long Halloween. Like, they were pumping them out in that early part of the century. And they were all very, very good. And they were all showstoppers. And I feel like we had a regular cadence of showstopping comics coming out in that period. I don't know why we don't anymore.
I also think that we've greatly devalued Jeff Loeb's work over the year.
For sure.
Not everything he did was great. I think we can all agree on that.
No one does.
He certainly had, I mean, it's great. You know, he's done some amazing work.
There was a time period in the 2008, 9, 10 era where if his name came up, a great portion of the fan base spit.
Yes.
And I don't know why. Because,
I mean, Red Hulk
Long
was
Halloween,
fun as hell.
Superman for All Seasons, Spider-Man Blue, Daredevil Yellow, Hulk Gray, Captain America White came out later, and Red Hulk, which is super fun. It's like five or six classic. Well, Red Hulk probably not a classic, but five or six terrific books. I don't understand why.
But if you were to go and look at like his sort of regular output, like the regular monthly kind of stuff, I don't know that stuff was all that memorable.
No, but I mean, I don't think it warrants the fan reaction when you say his name.
I think, and if some of it's bound up into the TV stuff, like more recently. But I think I know that this is looked on reverently, this book at this point. Yeah. But I don't feel like it's talked about as much as Long Halloween.
No, it should be.
Part of that is just that it's, you know, it's Batman, right? Like Batman's always going to be a little bit more exciting. Batman, it's a sexier title. But it's almost like this book is taken for granted because it's so good. And you mentioned the Marvel stuff, Daredevil Yellow and Spider-Man Blue and stuff. When you just sort of deconstruct it like that, it sounds very gimmicky. But it's actually a very strong way to format these books. And there's an elegance to them that it's a very simple concept done really, really well. And, you know, beyond the seasons thing, I think, you know, Tim Sale is in this particular book doing the Norman Rockwell thing.
Yep.
Yeah.
And like you said, Josh, very just visually interesting and unlike anything that was coming out at the time. So it does feel really special.
2 points there. One, I think that we're talking about Jeff Loeb and Tim Sale, and I think that one of the big stories here is Bjarne Hansen, who is on Colors. Yep. And I have forgotten that name. I remember it, saying it out loud, seeing it in print. I was like, right. But it's not a person who works anymore. But the coloring in this is, the other books, the Marvel books are all color-based or whatever. But the palette in this thing is, you know, as perfect of coloring as you can have on something. I don't know how he did it. I don't know if it's digital or if it's watercolored. I think it's fake watercolor probably.
Yeah, there's like at least a watercolor effect. And there's also stuff like the blur stuff, like the great page with the standoff with the terrorist and Superman really fast, you know, disarms him.
Yeah.
And that sort of feels like a crayon almost, or like a chalk pastel. There's some really interesting like mixed media kind of things going on there. But and I mentioned the Norman Rockwell thing. That's in composition, but it's not necessarily in style. There's definitely Norman Rockwell paintings that they're aping there, like Clark sitting at the counter of the diner with his back to us. The family, you know, sitting around the table carving the turkey. Classic Norman Rockwell Saturday Evening Post images. But they're not, the coloring isn't aping Norman Rockwell necessarily. It's doing its own thing. It's very cohesive without feeling like it's just we're doing Norman Rockwell and that's it. There's something else going on there, and it just there are pages where you turn the page, and when you mention coloring, I think the first thing you think of with this particular book is that image of the two of them, Clark and Jonathan, looking out at the horizon over the farm, and those pinks in the skies and everything. And it's so striking. And this was just such a joy, as you said, to read.
Part of me is thinking when I look at the coloring, like, it would be very surprising if this was digital, given the fact of when it was done. Digital coloring in the late 90s was not good.
Ugh.
I mean, if you think what it looked like when Lynn Varley moved over to it on The Dark Knight Strikes Again, you know, and how I think I want to say Laura Martin was probably the trendsetter, and that was a completely different style of that. So if this is Photoshop coloring, it is years ahead of its time. Because there's none of that digital crap that we saw all over the place that ruined, not ruined, but that made a lot of those comics not age well, I guess.
In particular, there's a period of Marvel of, you know, in the 2000s with the
Hi-fi.
Digital coloring that just so muddy and, it's tough.
Well, Bjarne Hansen was nominated for an Eisner for this book.
Should have been.
Surprising.
I suspect it's analog. And then one other point that I wanted to make is that when we do talk back about, this is sort of unrelated to the other thing, I think that this book got eclipsed by All-Star Superman. I think that All-Star Superman took the place that this book had. They have a shitload in common, you know, when you want to talk about Tim Sale to Frank Quitely. But if we had to, you know, put in the cool guy hipster factor, then, you know, Quitely and Morrison win. Because at least Jeff Loeb sort of fell out of fashion. But, you know, it does Americana without making you feel terrible about it.
Well, I thought about that a lot while reading this
book. Yeah.
Because one of my favorite things about the book is the way that Tim Sale draws Superman to be this, like, incredibly large, oafish character. Mm-hmm. And the only other person I can think of that does that to that extent is Quitely in Also Superman.
That image that is always going around of Quitely, how he drew Clark and his posture versus how Superman's posture was. And it's something that has a lot of character to it. And I don't know if, I don't know historically, does Quietly come to that point on Superman without this book? Or he certainly comes about it a little bit differently.
I tended to think of Quietly's figures as being almost scrawny, though. Like, if I think back to when I first saw him, which would have been on one of the X-Men books or whatever, like, everyone was kind of slight or skeletal.
Sure.
So that doesn't really seem like a style. So he might have been influenced by this to a certain extent. You know, in that same vein, when we talk about Superman being, you know, really bulky, there's a bit at the end where he's Clark and he's in Smallville and they're recovering from the flood and they're all at, I don't know, it was like a vigil or something like that. And there's a lineup of all the people.
Yep.
And he's gigantic compared to everybody. And I thought, that's really interesting because everybody knows, and this is the thing that goes on forever, like, wouldn't you know that he's him? And, like, wouldn't these be... But I think that if you take it from a non-literal point of view, like, he's just one of them and they don't notice it, even though he's larger than life.
He's a big old farm boy.
It's also a psychological thing.
Right.
Like,
it becomes a metaphor.
He's hiding in plain sight.
Yeah. Yeah.
You don't allow yourself to think that he's Superman.
Yeah, and as soon as I start to go, well, wouldn't they know? Like, I was like, that ruins it. There's no point in doing that. It's a visual that's supposed to
mean
something.
This is the magic of Superman.
Yes.
You either buy into the glasses or you don't. And if you don't buy into the glasses, then I don't know why you're reading comics, because that's sort of the magic of the thing.
It's magic.
There's a thing here, not a thing, there's a scene here when Lois finds the note that Clark is writing to his family, and he mentions LL, and she thinks that he's talking about her, but he's talking about Lana. And Clark comes up behind her and says, Lois, that's personal. He is like 2.5 feet taller than her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I just love that they just play with him as... And the thing is, he's not the Rock. You know, he's not like cut out of granite. He's just a big guy who's been throwing hay bales around.
He's got big paws, is how I really think of him. There's a mastiff puppy that lives across the street. Not by himself. He has a family. But that he's like not a year old yet. And he's so awkward looking. His feet are too big, and he's just kind of—he's got this weird stride, and that's what this Clark makes me think of. And there's the bit on the porch where he's sitting with Ma Kent, and they're just sort of like cuddled up together. And the way he wears a suit—it's just like it's just sort of like draped on him. He looks awkward in normal life.
It's really interesting that none of the characters, certainly not when he's Clark, ever comment on the fact that he's gigantic.
Right.
And I think that has something to do with it. Because even Superman aside, if he was a huge person like that, that's all he would hear is how big he is. How's the weather up there? You know, what are you? You should play football. You know, like, it's just this accepted fact of this giant man. And if I think of it as a visual metaphor, I like it so much more.
Right.
Because you're talking of, like, imagine that size represents his goodness. Mm-hmm. You know, and he's just bigger than
everyone. He's concave. Like, the way he holds himself, like, he doesn't stand up.
Yeah.
It's that posture. He's trying to be smaller so he could, like, fit in, and he's trying to be invisible when he's Clark. But then when you see him as Superman flying through, he's got that barrel chest.
Yeah.
And, like, his, like, figure changes, and the way that suit fits him.
When he says, Lois, that's personal, he does become that person.
Yeah.
And that page is the one that's sort of separate, you know, and he dwarfs her. He's five times the person she is. And for a second, like, last two pages, his eyebrows are, it's like he's mad. And you're very unused to seeing Clark Kent angry like a human. And also, there is no romance with Lois in this whatsoever.
He asks her to dinner a couple times, but they haven't started dating. This is
It's
early on.
When she passes out from the virus, there's that great close-up where he, like, swoops her up in his arms, and he's terrified, and they have that sort of, their lips almost touching. He's so close to her because he's
very
so afraid
suggestive,
he's going to lose her. Yes.
It's somewhat like the cartoon where there was no real romance between them either.
Mm-hmm.
The
flirty at best. There's a thing in here that I didn't expect, but they made a big deal out of it. It's a turning point, is that he reveals himself to Lana Lang, and then when her letter, her portion of narration comes up, then it all hinges on that. She's like, that's when everything changed, and she leaves the next day. And I was like, that's friggin' great storytelling.
Yep.
Because it's the opposite of what you would expect to happen. Everything about it, you know? And I had forgotten about that as sort of a story turn, but it's just a really intelligent beat. I don't know if that's necessarily considered canon. I know they drifted apart, but it's a good reason for them to drift apart in the way, or at least her reasoning.
She changes depending on... I don't even... The last time I saw her in a comic, it was when they gave her that superpowers. God, why'd they do that?
Oh, she was Superwoman. What do you mean, why did she do that? I mean, come on, it's comics. Of course they did that.
They don't need to give everyone superpowers. Some people can be okay never having superpowers.
That storyline almost in a way is like kind of the progenitor for the Jane Foster as Thor
kinda
story almost. Like, it definitely didn't have the fanfare that Thor story had, but yeah.
This feels like DC should feel, the way that DC doesn't feel anymore.
It's at least one of the ways it should feel.
Yeah.
More often.
DC works really, really well in these retro-modern, is it 2002, is it 1957? Like, it could be either. It's also sort of the way that so much TV is made now. You know, there's so much television, especially stuff made for teens, is like, it's set in this nebulous time in which there are cell phones, but people don't really use them, and it's also like the 1950s, kind of. Like, it's this weird trend that is in television right now. It's the way the DC, like, Batman the Animated Series was like that, and this book is like that. I mean, this book isn't set now, but it could be set now, but also, the way Clark is dressed at the beginning of this book, it's like 1945.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know.
He's got the varsity jacket, and
there's like jalopies and things. But then when he goes to Metropolis, it's a modern city with modern things. And so it makes sense in this world. And I think that's really where DC really thrives, is in this sort of throwback milieu.
You know, the Art Nouveau kind of thing with,
I've been guessing it's really difficult to incorporate that into sort of the ongoing books. If you have Superman involved with The Flash and the Justice League, all that kind of falls apart. So I feel like they save that kind of Superman for a, quote, very special event. You know, it's
the timeless Superman?
Well, you know, it's like the big TV miniseries of the old days. You know, that's kind of what this is. It's because they can't keep up that sort of beautiful reverence and poetry all the time in the because of the way that the ongoings move, it just doesn't lend itself to that. Maybe that's why they're always disappointing.
With all due respect to everyone making comics, because it's all very hard, not everyone's this good.
True.
Mm-hmm. You know, we talked about that way back when we were reviewing Batman and Robin, issues 1 through 3, when they were all pick of the week. It's like, why aren't all comics this good? Because not everyone making them are this good.
Nor could the people who are this good keep it up at this level.
No.
You know, like, if your favorite band had to make an album every 6 months, they would suck. You know?
Yeah. Right. And this is very self-contained. It's got the, it has the four seasons thing. It has a beginning, middle, and end without being like the ultimate Superman story. And I like that. I like that it doesn't feel like it has to do, the, like you said, the Lois romance. You don't have to get to that part of the story. Mm-hmm. There's a, they focus on a different dynamic, this sort of His Girl Friday kind of.
Yeah, the professional, you know, rivalry. She's the woman of the city. She wears a lot of black. She's hip and stylish, and he's the giant country boy, but he still manages to continually scoop her.
And they don't feel like it's necessary to do, like, the love triangle storyline. Yeah. It's not about that. It's just about how different people with very different sensibilities and backgrounds view this one character. And I love the narration in this. I enjoy aspects of Long Halloween and some of the other big hitter Jeff Loeb, Tim Sale books, but for this, I think this script is so good. It's so sharp. It has so much character to that narration. I love comics, or in movies too, where you have that narration that it's thematically attached to what you're seeing on screen, but it's not directly linked to it. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, listening to somebody do a monologue, a great soliloquy about this character, and it's so rich. And so I really enjoyed the script a lot. And like we said, there's some page turns here where you just, you know, your jaw drops at some of these double page spreads.
Yeah, there's a regular rhythm of double page spreads here that just one after another. I'm looking at the one now where Clark and Lon are flying over Smallville. And
the bit where he stops the train.
Yeah.
And you cut and then... The cut after that is that, just the two handprints in the front of it. That was the first one that really sort of was like, wow. You know, there's not like a ton going on in it. It's not like a lot of times we will look at, you know, comic, oh, this is so detailed or whatever. And it is where it needs to be. But that is just a very simple, striking image, you know, that
impactful
scale and whatever. And also, I want to finish just the thought on the narration. It can go badly. Or at least be boring really easily. And I think that the compliment that I would have for this work is that at no point was I aware of that narration or that somebody was writing it. I wasn't thinking about it. I was just, I mean, like the most it was like, well, who's this talking now? You know, yeah. And they don't give it to you right away. You kind of have to wait for it, you know, in some instances. It was so naturalistic. And each voice... I don't know. They may have been written the same, but it sounded like a different person.
Yeah, so it was Pa Kent was the spring narrator. Lois was the summer narrator. Lex was the fall narrator. And then Lana was the winter narrator.
And it's never Clark, which I think is a great choice.
That's great.
Back to the visual.
I mean, you talk about it's not always detailed, but when it is detailed, I'm looking at the scene towards the end where they're Lana and Pete and Clark go back to the general store.
Oh, in that little store with the lunch counter is just every time you're in there, you're like, this is just beautiful.
Like every little thing on the shelves and the world feels lived in and the floor seems a little dirty. And
I felt like when I was a little kid reading like a Richard Scarry picture book where you're just like poring over every detail on the page. And the other thing is it's also very bespoke. It's very like, the word you used, Josh, was analog. So not just to distinguish it from digital, but just like you can feel the person's hand there. It's not perfect circles. It's not perfect shapes. The lettering isn't like it's not painstaking, sat there with a protractor or anything. And there's something about that makes it feel more like a country store where things aren't perfect.
It should.
Angles aren't perfectly square.
I think there's a really good chance that if you don't know, If perchance you haven't been studying and thinking about comic book storytelling for a quarter of a century, I don't know how it may, because I read this when I, you know, before I did that. And so I can say, oh, it looks cool, but I didn't know what I was looking for. You know, that was the most I could do. And I think that these kind of images, these cartoony sort of shapes and these non-realistic depictions, I still need better words, this impressionistic, cartoony, you know, I don't know that they're all that attractive, you know, at the time. Or that I would understand, you know, what it is about it. Because it's not, you know, at the time, I liked Todd McFarlane and John Byrne and, you know, Alan Davis. And this is such a departure from that stuff that, you know, it's taken me such a long time. When I go back and look at it now, I can see so much else going on, you know, that it is very subtle, just great storytelling stuff.
It's like the Jack Kirby or Ditko thing. Yeah. Like, there's at a certain age, you might not, and with certain context... or removed from a certain context, you don't appreciate what's going on there.
people maybe couldn't necessarily articulate it, but they felt it, obviously, because they were huge.
Sure.
You know?
We should mention, we talked about the lettering. Richard Starking was the letterer. We didn't mention him in the beginning.
He was the guy. He was like the high test dude that you did when digital was new. And then like analog stuff, you went with Workman and Todd Klein.
Yeah.
He does that great trick with the word balloons where they're really small. Unlike, especially like a big character like Lex or Superman, and you kind of have to lean in and look at it, and like you get the sense of like, oh, he's like whispering, or oh, it pulls in your attention. I like that trick.
I love how spare it is, and that you know, Loeb is clearly writing for the artist, which is Tim Sale does these big panels, and he doesn't feel the need to fill them with dialogue.
Yes. Yeah.
Especially compared to a lot of books you read now, like one or two dialogue balloons, one caption box maybe, or nothing.
There are no pages that are like overdone. Because a lot of even really good comic artists will have to sacrifice a page to exposition and fill it up with crap. And you can see it. Like you just turn the page, you can see it. This does not exist in this book. Everything, you know, is paced properly and there aren't concessions to sort of like, well, I got to get this work done. It just works. It's part of it. And this place is where it looks kind of heavy, but it never feels like that. Here, I can come up with one criticism.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Toxin.
Yes.
There's just so that we don't.
It was 1998.
I'm wondering if like that was a hey, we'll make this cool, or is that a comment on what was going on? Toxin is a woman.
That's interesting.
Superman saved early on, and she was like, "He saved my life. He's the best thing ever." And Lex Luthor then co-opts
He's
that.
He's my
person.
Angel.
And turns her into a superhero with the name Toxin, who looks like a villain. Mm-hmm. He has a whole thing about poisoning the people, and she's the antidote, which is weird that you'd name her Toxin. But, you know, like, she's got her butt hanging out, and it's...
She did poison in the first place, so...
Right. But she didn't know. She was trying
no,
to...
No, but she was the reason.
Right. She's all messed up. But, like, there's, like, a bit where they land, and she's only on it for a couple of pages. She's sitting down, and you can just see her ass. And I was like, what is this doing here? It totally threw me out of it because it just didn't fit with any of the other art in here. And I just thought that was felt like a misstep style.
And it starts with she's getting experimented on. He's got her eyes, you know, open like Clockwork Orange style. And that felt like, oh, that's a shift. And yeah, so I'm curious if that's sort of because there are several different exercises, depictions of Superman as a wholesome or as a boring character versus what's going on in the 90s or what's going on in the early 2000s, the edgy stuff. And like we see that play with a bunch of that, but here it's not like obvious what the intention is or if that's the intention.
And even if it is that intention, I think it's a misstep because it doesn't fit.
Yeah.
If I start thinking about it, I think you could cut most of that out.
Well, luckily it's like four pages.
Oh, it's, and it's like it's half baked for like a 4-issue series like this.
What is interesting
is not developed enough.
If it is a reaction, if not, either way, if this is only 6 years after the death of Superman, you know, this is only a handful of years after Mullet Superman and all that came with it. And so, like, this was, I mean, I read this at the time. I was reading comics at the time. I was going weekly at the time, but I don't remember exactly. But this felt like a reset of the character.
Yeah. And it's 6 years before A New Frontier.
Right. This feels like one of those books where, like, it's like, you know what? We've lost our way with Superman. Here is what Superman should be.
And you don't necessarily need to use that template in everything, but you need to keep that core in it. Like, we used to always talk about Geoff Johns, like, what's the main theme? And not what you do isn't going to be the same as everybody else. But if you have this, you figure out what the kernel of this thing is, and you keep that in your book with Superman, then you're going to have more success than if you don't.
Yeah.
You know what? Another sort of way to look at it, too, is that this makes a beautiful story and sort of origin, or at least a character study of this. And imagine if, which they did it in the original Superman, the motion picture. I think that's the closest to this thing. Like, why didn't they do this on any of the Superman movies that followed? Like, when they I know why.
It's crazy.
But, like, when you think about, like, when they came back and they had Zack Snyder do that Superman movie, it's the farthest possible thing from this. And I don't know if that's just us? Is this our aesthetic?
The Man of Steel trailer felt like this. And that was one of the biggest whiplashes.
the whole promotional thing for Man of Steel was such a roller coaster. Oh man, this is going to be terrible. Oh, but this could be neat. Oh, look at that trailer. Do you see that trailer? It's got this like Terrence Malick thing going on, and then
they screwed me so bad that when I saw the movie, I thought I liked it for a little bit.
Yeah.
Because I wanted to so much.
We have talked a little bit about, you know, it's bizarre that the world can so fall in love with Captain America.
Yeah.
Who is portrayed as wholesome and aw shucks as Superman is here. Yeah. But for whatever reason, Warner Brothers feels the need to constantly make Superman edgy. And I will say, the TV show is much closer to this. The Superman and Lois TV show right now.
Oh, okay.
Is much closer to this. In fact, they even take a scene out of this book. Huh. In the TV show, he saves a kid from getting hit by a car, and the kid says, cool costume.
So good.
And he says, my mom made it for me. They did that word for word in the TV show.
Can we talk about Trevor Burbank and where his parents are?
What is going on with this kid?
Is an insurance nightmare.
Like, every time, and it's,
I think we can call that a misstep, you know, along with Toxin.
I don't think it was a misstep.
No, I don't either.
I kind of laughed
visually.
Visually, like, it was just a strange choice. Like, it makes no sense that this kid only plays... His bike is on the ledge of a skyscraper. Not only that, it's snowing. It's slippery. And he only plays... This kid has issues.
Yeah.
It's very disorienting visually. Why is this kid dressed like Poochie and he's out on this ledge in the snow, and it's like the perspective doesn't work.
The one at the beginning, I thought, that's odd.
He's chasing a cat with a baseball glove on.
And then the second time, I was like, he's up there again?
The kid is back on the escalator.
You just reminded me that...
Still a great joke.
Reminded me that Kevin Smith did something funny.
That was a great joke. Jason Lee, he nailed that. I thought it was funny the second time, you know, like, it's like, you
it's
know
cute.
What, fine. But this is part of what I was saying. Like, in the first issue, Clark is straight out of Norman Rockwell, 1945. This kid is dressed like it's 1997. He's got the baggy jeans and the chain and the backwards hat. So it exists anywhere in time. It's a nebulous time frame.
This kid is like straight out of like a one sheet comic you get in the DARE program in school. Like, he's just like quintessential, like, attitude kid 90s. Does he have a chain wallet?
He has a chain wallet, yes, the second time.
He has a chain wallet.
Everybody had chain wallets then. I had a chain wallet then.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It also reminded me, going back to All-Star Superman, it reminded me of the girl on the ledge, you know, that has the heart-to-heart with Superman. So
there's,
I think
there's much more here than I remember there being. Yeah. In that book.
Could we talk a little bit about maybe reading this in 2022 and Lex?
What about him?
Go on.
Does he strike you in a certain way? I don't know.
What do you mean?
And this isn't the first time historically. I mean, DC has done the like President Lex stuff and or like the...
No.
I'm saying he looks like Trump.
I see what you're saying, but he's always had red hair.
Yep.
He's looked like that. Go back to Byrne.
Right, but they did that book where it's aping The Art of the Deal.
Yeah, but that was Byrne, and it was much more straightforward. The thing is this, is they knew all along that Trump was a doofus.
Sure.
Like in
That's
the
all
80s,
I'm saying.
Like, he was considered to be a clown, and they don't play Lex. They should never play Lex like a clown outside of the original motion picture and when we let them get away with it. But he's not that here. So maybe there's a hint to it visually, but I think that you are connecting dots that aren't there.
I'm just seeing what I want to be seeing.
I think Josh had the same volume. Did you guys have the volume with the extra stories in the back?
I did.
I have read those before. I didn't have that edition this time. The Comixology version doesn't have that.
Oh. Josh, you have that one?
I do, and I read
this is the one with Bruce meeting Clark for the first time.
It has three stories. It has Clark asking Lana to the prom. It has when Clark met Bruce, and then it has the story that Jeff did as a tribute to his son, Sam.
Right.
And they were all great.
Yeah, the meeting Bruce, I mean, it's slight. It's from Solo. It's two-page spread. So it's not two-page spread, but it's
two-page
short story.
Yeah. It's like pancakes.
Yeah, although it has much less structure than that.
Yep.
Solo was a great comic.
You know, I missed it completely.
That's a great project.
Yeah, it was. Mark Chiarello. They shit canned him.
Yep. Yep.
I think the Lana one is you know, it's the most complete of all of those.
I think they all offer something. I mean, the Clark,
yes,
and that Bruce one, I think, is strong for the even just the sort of black and white shots of Bruce in the back of that car. He sees them in the top panel, Clark and Pete playing baseball. And there's just so much sadness in that drawing. I think that's a great drawing.
Since it's been a while, is Clark playing baseball?
Mm. Yep.
And then Bruce is in the car. Is this before the parents were killed or after?
After.
After, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Alfred and Bruce are on a road trip trying to cheer him up. And the car breaks down in Smallville.
The thing that stuck out to me of that is that by the time we got to California, I convinced Alfred that it would be a good idea to fly home. And I was like, what did he do to make Alfred get it?
Didn't care about anything.
That happened.
Changing the radio
station.
Like
at some point, Alfred just went, fine. And he flew him home, and I want that scene.
And they left the car.
Like, he'd had enough. Yeah.
Keeps telling him to pull over so he can solve a different mystery.
Sam's story, which is a really, you know, wonderful tribute to Jeff's son, made me tear up a little bit. If only because, you know the pain in it, but it's a sweet
really
story.
Sad story.
But the Lana prom story is probably the most, it feels the most part of the previous comic.
Yeah. When he gets covered with mud.
He asks her out to the prom, stays up for the tux, and then helping a woman's stuck car, he gets covered in mud and he has to.
And she's an awful woman.
Yes, she is.
All small town Americana stories have one of those witch ladies in them.
Sam's story features a cameo by Mary Jane Watson and Gwen Stacy from Spider-Man Blue.
Oh, cool.
Is this the book you hand someone when they say, why is Superman good? Or give me a great Superman story? Is this the book you hand somebody?
I don't know if it's going to change anybody's.
Well, if someone says, what's a great Superman story I should read? Is this the book you're going to say first? Or where does this fall in sort of thing?
Definitely up there. And, it's annoying, but like it depends on the person. Like it depends on what they're looking for.
I think it's a better example than All-Star Superman, for sure, because I find that to be more avant-garde.
Yeah, yeah. There's definitely some stuff in All-Star Superman that's a little more...
It's more advanced.
It's more advanced. It's not the entry-level course. But this has a lot of the stuff that I love about the core Superman concept, whereas All-Star Superman is more advanced because it gets into the weirder stuff about Superman. But could also be like more confusing or even more off-putting to someone who is maybe not as receptive, has not, you know, bought in yet.
I think you have to buy in.
Yeah,
like, you have to buy into this. And this has to be attractive to you, which is a tall order for people, I think, now, certainly younger than us. I don't, because it's so fraught now.
I think if they do like it, that's a good sign that they're cool. That they're like a neat person that you'd want to hang out with.
Or not cool.
Right.
But does that mean they're cool or not cool in the objective sense of the word?
And I mean our cool.
Right. Which isn't good. Like
not their like cool. I also just think there's just some great craft in here.
Yep.
Okay, so the first time you see the image of Clark in his room back in Smallville, and he's overhearing Ma and Pa Kent talking about him, and they're saying, do you think he can hear us? And just that there's all levels of comic storytelling coming together to do something cool that only comics can do. That's right. Always fun to see. But then you revisit that same angle where he's lying in bed when he ends up in Metropolis, and you see his apartment, and he has the same sort of setup in his room, but the coloring is different. It's a different context going on. And here in the narration, it says, where does he go when he's not keeping a bridge from collapsing or stopping a train from derailing or answering a child's cry for help? And just, it's subtle, but like that, or answering a child's cry for help is over that image of him lying in the room with the window open. So you know that if a child were to cry for help, he would be able to hear, because that previous
scene. If a kid were to perhaps play baseball on a ledge.
Playing baseball.
I love that panel so much. The
on
one
an
of him.
Icy, snowy ledge.
Just eating a peanut butter sandwich in bed with the window open. And you could almost hear the cars honking.
Yeah.
If it was a film, you'd hear the sound, you know, the crowd noise, and you'd hear it. But he was content in the bed with his sandwich. He's got a little TV. It's not facing the bed. It's facing away from the bed. He's just enjoying a moment. It's that whole Samaritan Astro City thing, you know. It's like that, he's enjoying a moment.
Yes.
For just a moment, he gets to lay down and have a sandwich and not worry about anything.
You know what's kind of interesting is that if you think about, like, one of the themes that keeps coming back in Superman now is, like, how can I do more? There's always something else. It's a very modern mm-hmm. perspective where right. you can't ever get to all of it. And you know, how much does that reflect what modern life feels like? I yep. just can't get to all of it. And the stress that comes along with that. But this is more, I'm going to do as much good as I can, and I'm going to try to feel okay. You know, like, because that's the thing I'm supposed to be doing. There's so much less ennui and anxiety behind it. And it's not so much about getting to do as much good as you can in quantity, but just, like, giving the best that you, the most you can do.
Right.
I'm not phrasing it well.
No, you're right. No, you're right.
There's a great sequence in here in the Lex issue where if someone was like, there's no conflict with Superman, he has all the powers, he can do anything. There's no drama to that. So Lex has this virus out there, and he's saying in the narration, he can bend steel until he is blue in the face. He can see through walls clear to China. He can even fly from here to the moon for all the good it will do him. Like a Dalmatian tied to the front of an empty fire engine, smelling the smoke, pulling ferociously at the leash, barking at the wind, there will be no one left to say thank you. So I think I actually skipped a page there, but the idea that you have all this, but you can't be everywhere all at once.
Right.
You can't fix mm-hmm. everything, but you have the capacity, but you just don't have the scope, you know, mm-hmm. like you can do all these impossible things, but you can't do all of the impossible things
right.
at all times. And he's spinning plates.
That's always been the thing about Superman is that if you only are invested in the powers aspect of it, then yeah, he can do anything. He's unbeatable, but that's not what makes him interesting. It's what he does with those powers that makes him interesting. It's what mm-hmm. the limitations are. It's what the downsides are. He's pretty melancholy mm-hmm. in this book. And that's sort of my favorite Superman.
Yeah.
Lois's sort of motif is sort of like she's saying, if a person has all this power, why don't they do just whatever they want? But he chooses to do these things.
That question reveals more about the questioner than Superman.
Right. Because Lois is a skeptical person, and she can be calculating and transactional, and that's not Superman. But, and it's also not like the complete Lois story. It's just like her finding an insight about this character that looms so large in her life, and she's so large in his life. But it's just about these characters not necessarily finding the ultimate lesson of life itself. It's just seeing, you know, that little spark, that little something, you know, something clicks for them in that moment. That's what I love about these scripts.
Well, I think it's a great place to end our discussion on Superman for All Seasons. Let's do ratings on it out of 5.
Out of 5, okay.
Out of 5. 5.
It's a 5. First page, I went 5. Right away, I went 5. Oh.
It's a great book. It's a really, really great book. If you haven't read it like we have in decades, and you're a more mature, older comic reader now, read it again. If you've never read it for the first time. It's a great Superman story.
Yeah, if you're feeling like, I don't know, discouraged or like, even just about like, not even just about the world, but just like maybe jaded about like comics or like you haven't been reading anything great, like this is so refreshing.
What this made me want to do was read a bunch of more of these kind of books, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like I want to go back and reread their Marvel stuff, which I haven't read in forever. And I want to read some more of the all-time books that were coming out in that era that, again, I just don't think are coming out now for various reasons. There was so many things that sort of, I don't want to say changed the genre, but, you know, elevated it in that time. And this is one of them. You got to read it again. If you've read it before, read it again. That's iFanboy Booksplode. It's the sister show to the Talksplode show, Josh's interview show. Those both shows were unlocked by the patrons at patreon.com/iFanboy. They also unlocked the monthly media splode show. And, of course, we have our regular Pick of the Week show, which Josh and I, sometimes a special guest, talk about the week's comics. And also, Paul and I will get together with our buddy Ryan Haupt and talk about animation, which we're doing also this month with House of Mystery release. All those shows are at fanboy.com. Thanks for listening. We appreciate it. Thanks for being a patron. If you were unlocking the show, thank you. And we'll be back in 2 months with another Booksplode. And until then, I'm Connor.
I'm Paul.
I'm Josh. Thanks, everyone. We'll be right back.
That kid is back on the escalator again.
Leave it alone.
What?